Hey everybody, you're listening to Beyond 1894. This is the official podcast of Louisiana Tech University. I'm Gavin Kelly from the Office of University Communications, and I'm sitting here today with Dr. Jane Jacob. She is the Associate Dean for Academic Affairs in the College of Education. She's an assistant professor in psychology, and she's also my group mate in the LTLI cohort. So I'm happy to have her with us today. Jane, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Sort of the way we approach these interviews with all of our guests is we like to know about your background, where you're from, how you got into what you're doing, because all of our tech faculty and staff, students, they all bring something different to the table, and they all have very unique stories. So tell us about where you're from.
So I was born in Saudi Arabia, lived there for about 3 months, and then I lived in India, South India, for 2.5 years, and then I lived in the Middle East in a small country called Oman, lived there for about 9 years. And my mom, so a lot of this movement is because of my mom's job. She's a nurse.
Okay, I was going to ask.
And I started off in Saudi Arabia because that's where she was working at the time. Often in, especially for Middle Eastern countries, if you're not a citizen, it's common to have people from other countries come and work there. In some Middle Eastern countries, there's a big job or economic divide where there are people, and this was particularly true in Oman at that time. It could be very different right now, but at that time, there were people who owned all the companies, and then a lot of people, there was sort of like a middle class missing, and then a lot of low socioeconomic individuals who didn't qualify to work in those jobs. And so nursing was one of them. And so she started off in Saudi Arabia, had me, but because she was on contract, she couldn't, I think she was in a hostel situation, which is different from the way that hostels are run in the US or in Europe. Basically, she couldn't take care of me at the hostel. And at the time, oddly, my dad didn't have a job in Saudi Arabia, but he had a job in Oman. Mm-hmm. And he didn't feel like he could take care of me on his own. He didn't feel ready for that just yet. And so my aunt actually stepped in and offered to take care of me. And I stayed with her for about 2.5 years. By that point, my mom's contract was over. And the reason why I say this is often, at least at that time, a lot of your work is contract-based. You can't just up and leave. It's very much like you have to finish your term. So, yeah, I ended up in Oman, lived there for about 9 years. My mom got an opportunity to work in the U.S., and she thought educationally that'd be really great for me, like a great move.
So how old were you around this time?
At that time, I was about 11, okay. Maybe 10, 11. I think I was 11 when I moved here. And we landed in Jacksonville, Illinois, which is a very small town, just maybe 30 minutes away from Springfield, Illinois. Mm-hmm. I was the first probably Asian person in my school.
Okay.
And for viewers who don't know, I'm Indian American. So it was a culture shock for me. It was a culture shock for the students there as well. We were there for about 8 months. I think my mom at that time had, she had been training in oncology, and there's a specific area within oncology called bone marrow transplant. It's pretty specialized, but she ended up at a nursing home in Jacksonville, Illinois, which was not suited to her training. And so she was also feeling a bit unfulfilled in, mm-hmm. in work, and she decided to apply to a job in the oncology ward at Mount Sinai Hospital in Baltimore. She got the job, mm-hmm. so then we moved to Baltimore, and we lived there for about 9 years. And
so at this age, yeah. Are you like feeling like you're bouncing around a lot, or are you just kind of going with it because it's just where life is taking you?
A mix of both.
Okay.
So I didn't have strong opposition, but at the same time, I'm not an extrovert, I'm an introvert, mm-hmm. and so going to a new school was always like, oh no, I got to do this again.
yeah.
And it takes me some time to get comfortable and like meet friends and all of that. So that part was a bit hard. But at the same time, I don't think there was much protest from me. It was great. I basically went from opportunity to opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. Yeah. So then we were in Baltimore for 9 years, did my college there, high school, 1 year of middle school, and then I found a grad program. Actually, I'd applied to a couple of different grad programs. One of them was at University of Houston, and it sort of married my interests together at the time, and we moved to Houston as a family, and then I did grad school there, which actually worked out really well for me as a grad student because I could live with my parents instead of having to find a place at my on my own on a very low stipend. So that was really good. Mm-hmm. After grad school, I found a postdoc in London at the University of Westminster, and I lived there for 3 years. And then
just another place, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then I got the job here, and I've been here ever since.
Okay. So
I asked you if it was, you wanted
no,
the long
I appreciate
version.
That. I appreciate that. And that is truly very interesting. And I think we're going to back up a little bit because
yes, yes.
we sort of skipped over the part of where you sort of honed in on the area of study that
yeah.
you like. When did you decide, you know, amongst all this bouncing around and,
right.
and getting your roots set, when did you decide that your interests are what they ended up being? You know what I mean?
Okay. My interest changed a bit, maybe every 2 years, somewhere around high school or early middle school or mid-middle school. I thought, actually, I really like biology. Mm-hmm. I like to understand the way that things work. And I thought I was going to be a microbiologist because for some reason, really loved any bacteria chapter that we covered in biology. And I thought,
who doesn't, right?
Right, exactly. Hey, this would have been really helpful during COVID times, right?
True,
because I could have been
true.
A virologist.
Right.
So I thought all throughout high school, I'm going to be a microbiologist. I'm going to prepare for that. Had a lot of interest in my biology classes. And I think my senior year, I was supposed to take AP biology. Something happened and that class got taken away. And I received a call from my guidance counselor asking, all right, we've got some other options. What do you want to take? He mentioned some options. I wasn't really happy with them. And then he said, oh, actually, there's AP psychology. Do you want to try that? I said, sure. Hadn't considered psychology, had not really known much about it. And I took it, and it just clicked in a really fantastic way. I was a very good student, straight A's. And yet this topic was something that clicked in such a natural and organic way that I thought, okay, I really need to explore this. I know I've been head set on biology, but I wonder if I need to go into psychology.
That's crazy because it sounds like it happened like by chance.
Yes,
that you
exactly.
sort of fell into it.
Exactly.
Man, meant
exactly.
to be, huh?
Yeah. So then I thought, okay, let's look into psychology programs. There was a there was a college career fair around that time. It was my senior year. And was looking through programs. And this is also another like happenstance thing where I needed to tie my shoelaces. And I happened to tie my shoelaces near a table where someone peered over and said, hi, would you like to talk about our program? And I thought, well, I can't be rude. I've got to. And so I'm talking to them and I look at their offerings and they had a biology psychology dual major. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. Because I had been feeling like, well, I don't want to abandon my interest
in biology.
Yeah,
you don't want to bail now. Yeah.
Exactly. And I didn't, you know, this was one class. What if it doesn't work out? And at the same time, I also thought, I had a very limited view on psychology. I thought that it was all therapy. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, maybe I can transition from my biology into this therapy psychology space, and this will be the major for me. So that's how I started. I didn't know that biopsychology was its own field, and actually that dual degree program really helped me see that, and that's how I ended up in my current field, which is cognitive neuroscience.
So studying psychology originally with the intent to do what? Like, what career were you originally? Was it always teaching, or was it?
Yeah, good question. So at the very, very beginning, I thought therapy because I thought that that's all that psychology was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of instances here and there where people would confide in me, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe I put people at ease, and so this might be, maybe it's a sign, maybe I should go in that field. And as I took classes in biology and in psychology, I realized actually there are specific parts where the two of them go really well hand in hand, and areas like learning about sensation and perception, you're learning about behaviors like seeing, like hearing, like tactile sensations, somatosensation rather, and at the same time you're also learning about the biological processes that underlie them and support them. I took a neuroscience class that I, before taking the class, you know, much like a lot of undergraduates, you know, you talk, you hear from your friends, oh my gosh, it's such a hard class, it's the worst.
Sure.
And I took it and it was fantastic. I think the professor had changed by that time, but it was such a great class. And I never knew how the brain worked, at least in that level of detail. And it just made sense again. And I thought, okay, I really like sensation perception. I liked my cognitive psychology class, and I really like neuroscience. Is there something that combines all these things together? And I did a Google search with behavioral neuroscience, with cognitive neuroscience, and sure enough, there were programs there. And I talked to my undergraduate advisor, and he encouraged me as well. That being said, so that's my interest in terms of field.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the way in high school, I think it was when I joined National Honor Society, we had some tutoring opportunities. And in that space, I'd realized, actually, I really like to teach. And funny enough, I also realized I don't want to teach at a high school level because I saw what my teachers were going through.
Sure.
And I started thinking about teaching at a college or above sort of level. And that paired really well with this interest in psychology, turned into cognitive neuroscience, turning into getting a PhD. So actually, in mentioning this to my undergraduate advisor and some other professors, they had learned that I wanted to teach. I really wanted to be a college professor. And sometimes in the hallways, if they had seen me, they'd call me Dr. Jacob or something like that, which is adorable thinking about all those years ago. But super encouraging. And it was actually really helpful to mention things like that to them early on, because they would also guide me along the way and tell me what to look for in a grad program, what are the struggles that they faced as professors. Yeah, it was really enriching.
So did you roll sort of the academic side, did you roll right from degree to degree to degree?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
So,
yeah.
Was it just like, as you're going, how is your sort of plans evolving? How are your plans evolving as you go from master's to doctorate, you know? And what happens when you get to the end of that doctorate and you...
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, you have an existential crisis.
Sure.
That's what you do. So I didn't have a need to stop between degrees. Mm-hmm. So from high school, I knew that which college I was going to go to. From when I was in college, I knew that I wanted to get a PhD. And by junior, senior year, I'd figured out that it was going to be cognitive neuroscience, applied to PhD programs, got in, and just moved forward that way. I think And so to clarify, especially in my field, it is possible to go from a baccalaureate degree directly into a PhD.
Wow,
and
okay.
Also get your master's along the way, which is what I ended up doing.
How was the program set up in a way that allows you to do that?
Great question. Okay. So they, I guess they advertise it as a PhD program, and then you find out that you can get the master's along the way. And, believe the way that it worked is the courses that are set up in your first 2 years are foundational courses that count towards the master's degree. And then as you are continuing on in your third and fourth year, you're shifting over from foundational courses into maybe more specialized courses and a lot more research hours, dissertation hours. And so that portion is where you're finishing up or starting and finishing up your dissertation. There are some programs here that do that as well. I don't know about the other colleges. I know that in the department where I work in psychology and behavioral sciences, our IO doctoral program is set up that way. Mm. I think our counseling PhD program is also set up that way, but I know of IO doctoral students who are in the doc program, have met the requirements for the master's degree along the way, and then will choose if they want to take the master's comprehensive exam to be able to get the master's degree as well. Not all of them do it, but quite a few of them do.
Interesting. Thanks for clarifying that. That was news to me as something I hadn't really heard of.
Sure. It's field dependent. Maybe sure. It's very popular in psychology.
Maybe so. So you get that doctorate, and then what's next? Was it right into a teaching gig?
So I am close to getting the doctorate, and I start applying to teaching gigs and also postdocs and also industry jobs, because I get close to the end and I realize, my parents had been warning me about this for some time because I went into a very non-professional field. And if you know anything about Indian Americans, they're very big on you need to be able to have a practical job after this where you can take care of your family. And so many of us don't go into psychology. and for those of us who do, we try to focus it into the more professional sides of psychology, like IO psychology, which is industrial organizational psychology, or counseling psychology. But I decided I didn't want those, and I really liked cognitive psychology, mm-hmm. which is a very, basically researcher-heavy field. Although that's changing as well, but at the time it wasn't. And so around that time, I'm, putting feelers out there, applying to jobs, and got some interviews, got lots of opportunities to be rejected without interviews. And thankfully, one of the interviews was for the postdoc that I ended up going to. And it worked out really well in that it combined the expertise that I had accumulated in grad school, and it also had the additional opportunity to learn about some neuroimaging, which I didn't have the opportunity to do as much in grad school. So it was a really nice meld of the two. And it was in London, which when I applied, I wasn't really paying too much attention to that. And it worked out really well because I'm an Anglophile. And I just thought, someday in life I'll visit there and it'll be great. And I ended up being able to live there, and that was fantastic.
So then as we're chugging along through your career here, when was the first teaching
opportunity? Okay. So I actually had teaching opportunities when I was a grad student. Mm-hmm. When I started in grad school, I was a TA for a couple of different courses. And for one of those courses, it was cognitive psychology, I believe. Some days the instructor would have me lecture because he had a conference, or he had, something else that he had to do, or mm-hmm. couldn't be there. And that was probably my first experience of, okay, I'm here, I'm teaching a class, at least for the full time. I had one or two experiences in undergrad because my undergraduate advisor knew that I wanted to teach. He gave me a few opportunities, but it was, it was like a 20-minute lesson here or there. And this was, I think it was a Saturday class in grad school, and I was teaching for about 3 hours, and that was like, okay, I really need to have my material prepped. Confirmed that I really enjoyed it, so that was great. And in my graduate institution, from your third year onwards, you can teach as an instructor of record, and I was able to teach some classes there and get some experience under my belt. I would do some guest lectures during my postdoc, but not as many lectures as I would do during my time in grad school.
So it might be easy to look at all the places you've been and lived and worked and studied and see that Ruston is just another place on that laundry list. Mm-hmm. But how did you end up at Louisiana Tech? By chance, was there something that pulled you to Louisiana Tech, or is it this just where you ended up and then it ended up working out?
I think the latter. Mm-hmm. I think so. I'd applied to a number of different places, interviewed at a couple, and
where were you at this time before you?
This was when I was in London. Okay. And I was applying as a postdoc. Yeah, yeah. And even in that space, especially with a PhD, sometimes with these things, you don't know where you're going to end up. So you've got to cast the net wide. So I had even considered doing another postdoc in case the academic route didn't work. I'd considered going into industry as well in case the academic route didn't work out. But yeah, this worked out really well.
It did work out. And London, Louisiana, tomato, tomato.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. So how long have you been here at Tech?
This is my sixth year.
Okay. Yeah. How has your role changed from when you got here to now? Because I mean, you're an associate dean.
Yeah.
And that's pretty recent, right?
Yes.
Okay. So sort of talk about how your roles evolved.
I started off as an assistant professor. That's still my title in psychology and behavioral sciences. A couple of years into, maybe into my fifth year, I had started considering wanting to learn more about administration and just from a space of wanting to understand how policies are made, why policies are made, why are certain decisions made in a particular way. And instead of being on the receiving end and kind of being confused, I wanted to gain that understanding. And so I had started keeping my eyes open for if there's any opportunity to get into administration here. And about a year ago, I had reached out to my dean and asked him, or just wanted to get his thoughts on what he thought of me looking into or expressing interest in the associate dean position. The associate dean at the time had retired, and I had some ideas on what I could bring to the role, and we had a discussion, and some time later, he got back to me about it, yeah, with the interim role.
How has it been? I've actually talked to a couple other guests like this, transitioning from a teaching role to having still teaching duties.
Yes.
And then administrative duties as well.
Yes.
Is it like tough to balance? Do you find yourself doing a lot of one and then being like, oh, it's good I have the other because I can balance things out? How is that for you?
I'm actually really curious to see what they said about it. I find it tough to balance. I will say that it's easier to do with a bit of help. And what I mean by that is, especially for one of my classes, the way that I teach it, there's a grading element to it that can take up some time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easy enough to provide a rubric to someone else, like a graduate assistant, who can follow the rubric and grade for me. If that help wasn't there, I think I'd really be drowning.
Sure.
So I'm really thankful for my department to in providing me that resource that really makes my job possible and the balance possible. Yeah, I have this actually like a colorful system.
Okay.
In my office. If you ever come there, I'll show you there's a couple of bins with different colored chips, and it's something that my husband and I had picked up from the book Atomic Habits. Unfortunately, I'm forgetting the name of the author. Anyway, there's a portion in the book that's talking about the value of visualizing your progress, what
Okay.
you have worked on, what you are currently working on. And there's different implications there. Some of it can be from a place of accountability. Some of it can be from a place of giving yourself credit for something you normally wouldn't have credit for because you've forgotten about it or it's just not there in front of you. So I try to use that also as a way to balance and see how much time am I spending on my teaching duties. There's also research that I'm trying to do as well, and then also administrative duties, which those administrative duties in particular in this role have different divisions
mm-hmm.
that are there between them as well. So that serves as a way to visualize and keep in mind and try to maintain a balance. And of course, it depends on the time in the quarter. Around finals time, it ends
yes.
up being a lot more teaching
yes.
duties. At the beginning of the quarter, it ends up being a lot more administrative because I'm dealing with suspension appeals and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So because you have sort of a teaching side of things and an administrative side of things that gives you sort of different perspectives on the College of Education, what are some things about the School of Psychology and Behavioral Sciences that are important and make Tech stand out that are important to Louisiana Tech? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think so. At a college level, I think we're quite different
mm-hmm.
from other colleges. And then there are some standout elements of the psychology program here as well. So let me start with the psychology program.
Please.
Psychology is one of those umbrella terms that covers so many different types of behaviors. And I think that is probably echoed in every program across the state or the nation. What I will say is that we really have or put a lot of emphasis on providing students access to the experts in those fields. Of course, we're not all experts in each other's fields, but there are some really passionate individuals in our, I was going to say major, but in our program, mm-hmm. who just pour into their students at different levels. For graduate students, they have their core instructors, and then for undergraduate, it's a mix of us. And there's research opportunities where I have a fantastic time mentoring undergraduate research. There's also collaborative opportunities, and at a collegiate level, it's been interesting to see how we've got three different departments, actually, and a few more, because our lab school is also under the college as well. But it's interesting, if you're talking about it just from an undergraduate experience, you've got kinesiology, mm-hmm. which is different from psychology, which is different from curriculum instruction and leadership, which is our education
Very
program.
Much
so. That has also been interesting in terms of looking at tenure application and policies and things like that, or curricular differences, advising differences between the three majors. They're pointing in such different directions. And I think out of that, sometimes it can be a bit confusing. And then out of that, I think there's also opportunities, like one, hopefully our future will start looking a little bit like cognitive science, learning science, all of those things coming together. And it brings together a unique collaborative space that hopefully will enrich the community and enrich our state.
Yeah, I think the colleges are all unique from each other
yeah.
in the way that they're set up. And I do think that, like you mentioned about the College of Education, it's sort of like very different sort of segments of programs, but with definitely a common thread. Like, it makes sense for them to all be in the College of Education.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of sort of contrast there. And you mentioned programs, and you mentioned sort of the future, and you mentioned growth.
Yes.
And before we started the podcast, you spoke to me a little bit about a new concentration in the master's in counseling and guidance.
Yes.
Speak to that a little bit.
Thank you. There's a new concentration under the master's in counseling and guidance called counseling psychology. This is a program that's going to start in the fall. Applications are being accepted through June 1st, I believe. And it is a program that our faculty have put together with a lot of thoughtfulness in terms of making sure that the right courses are put together in a way that will lead to licensure. So especially for the state of Louisiana, the program leads to licensure, leads to meeting the requirements for licensure. And I think for two other neighboring states as well, Texas and Arkansas, I think there's one additional course for each of those, which either we will offer or guide students to take that course in those particular states, and then they can have licensure there as well.
Which is big, because if you're listening and you don't know, that sort of thing opens up. I mean, like, it changes your career options big
Absolutely.
Time being licensed.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for telling me about that. Thanks for being with us today. I appreciate hearing about your journey, about how you got here to Tech. I'm glad you're here. And thanks for being on the podcast, Jane.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Beyond 1894. Please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about this episode, check out our show notes. Beyond 1894 is produced by Louisiana Tech University's Office of University Communications.